From the 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studio, here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Happy Jackie Robinson Day to you baseball fans out there. Happy Scottie Scheffler Day if you are a Masters fan watching golf over the weekend. What a performance. You know, it's funny. I spent a lot of my weekend watching Tiger on the course. In fact, yesterday I got up early, and I think at 8:30 in the morning I was already watching. He was like four holes in, and I was on ESPN's app watching the coverage and basically followed Tiger's entire round when he was playing with the amateur Shipley and enjoyed that. That kind of set me up for the rest of the afternoon watching what Scottie was able to do. So impressive. And just a fun weekend of golf, a great weekend of sports. And with that, we welcome you back to the program. Steve Kaplowitz along with Adrian, who is back from wedding number 17 that he has been enjoying over the last couple of years. How was the trip to Dallas with the fam? How was the wedding?
It was excellent. Steve, All right. I'm going to give a non-wedding related story real quick.
Yes.
I made my first trip to Buc-ee's. Have you ever been to Buc-ee's?
No, but I know Buc-ee's because I've seen it everywhere. I've just never been.
It feels like it's inconveniently located everywhere. So it's hard for people like us who, even though we make trips out to East Texas, mm-hmm. it's not like you're going to make a trip out to Buc-ee's. This wedding happened to be out in Denton. So usually the Buc-ee's are like on the outskirts of big cities. And it was actually like right next to our hotel. We walked over to it. We got a chance to check out Buc-ee's, and it is worth all the hype. So it met all the hype. Everything that you see about it, it's all worth it. I loved Buc-ee's. It was fantastic.
Really?
Brisket sandwich. Like, if you would have told me, Adrian, you're gonna eat a brisket sandwich from a gas station this weekend, I would have said, what happened? Did something wrong happen?
Did you lose a bet?
Did I not eat anything at the wedding or something like that? Yeah, but no, they were fantastic. I willingly had the brisket sandwich, willingly got some other snacks, indulged on some sweets as well from Buc-ee's. So, yeah, the trip to Buc-ee's was exceptional. The wedding was great as well. I mean, it was out in Denton, like I said.
Yep.
It was another Texas A&M weekend. So it's all the Texas A&M graduates, the fans, the family. And they do that, like, Texas A&M chant or whatever during the wedding, Steve. They do it. And it's been like this for every wedding that I've been to from this side of the family. Not knocking them, because if you're an Aggie, you're proud to be a fighting Aggie. And they always do these different chants and dances and stuff like that.
Would you call Buc-ee's the greatest convenience store you've so far had the opportunity to go into?
Yeah, I think so. I actually do, because it's like everything you like in Trader Joe's for all the prices and quality of snacks mixed with convenience, like a Pilot, like a Pilot would give you or Love's would give you in a gas station. So yes.
I had one of those experiences in Denmark this past summer because we went into a gas station convenience store over there, and when we walked into the food aisle, I was looking at this. There was like a bakery, and there were all these sandwiches there, and I'm looking around going, what is this place? Because it just doesn't seem like your typical convenience store that you're used to. And we ended up having a nice, a chance to have a nice sandwich, and you had a ton to choose from, a lot to pick. And by the way, not cheap either. I'll tell you that much. In Europe, convenience stores are a fortune. But the point is, yes, I feel like we have a stereotype feeling of what a convenience store is, even though so many in the U.S. have fast food restaurants attached to them, where you could just go into the fast food restaurant in the convenience store. But at least in this particular situation, it sounds to me like Buc-ee's was two thumbs up for you.
Yeah, and not to mention everything was like labeled Buc-ee's. So you had your Buc-ee's cups, you had your Buc-ee's hats, you had everything, like t-shirts everywhere.
Did you buy merch?
I bought merch.
Of course you did.
I did. I had to buy. I was like, all right, you know what? For this little keychain, I'll bring it back to my wife. And, $5 won't cost me much. It's just more funny and more novelty than anything else.
Did she think you were crazy when you came back and presented her with a Buc-ee's keychain?
Yeah, I thought that the t-shirt was enough that my parents got her. And I think that's where I should have ended that. And so, like, the keychain was like, oh, this is nice. And I probably thought it was much cooler at the time than it actually was.
Did you also get, like, a coffee mug and a bunch of other stuff?
Or they had all that stuff.
But you limited it. You limited your Bucky experience?
I limited my Bucky's experience, but all the family who did not make the trip with us got some stuff. So,
understand. Yeah. Well, good for you. Sounds like the wedding was great, and if Bucky's was one of the highlights, nice. I'm sure a lot of our listeners can hear that, especially if they've been there, and be like, welcome, Adrian. Good to see that you realize what a lot of us have known for a long time.
Yeah, they're going to say stuff like, man, you've slept on this. Is it only your first experience? And yes, the answers are I have slept on it, and yes, it is the first experience I've had, but I'm excited for the next appearance I get out there at Bucky's.
I'm excited because today I got myself, we bought four tickets to the UTEP Dinner Theater. We're going to go see Legally Blonde on May the 11th. It's a Saturday night, and since your wife is the lead, we're very excited about that. We've been to the Dinner Theater a ton over the years, but never quite like this. So this is something that we're really looking forward to, and can't wait to be a part of this and really see Alyssa on the stage taking the major role.
Yeah, she's Elle Woods. It's Legally Blonde. And I appreciate you buying tickets. I appreciate you supporting. I appreciate everybody who's bought tickets so far. They're selling great. They sold out basically their first run, so they had to extend the show a little bit, which is exciting in itself. It tells you that people love local community theater here in town. I found out this weekend, Steve, that it's not just Alyssa in my household who will be a part of this dinner theater. I found out my dog, Ollie, is going to be a part of this because there's a dog in this play.
Really?
So this is crazy. I mean, now I'm insanely invested in this. Like, now I'm going to probably be out there a lot because I don't know if our dog is going to be able to make it 3-4 hours, maybe even 5 hours, certain production nights.
Wait a minute. Your wife has your family dog committed to do this the entire run?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yes.
How is that possible? Is your dog behaved enough where, is it a he or she?
It's a he.
Can he handle it?
I hope so, man. He's only 3 years old. If he's listening to this, I would say that I don't have much faith in him, and I'm sorry for that. He's a little crazy, so I'm really worried. Like, I'm not worried about my wife. She's going to be fine. I'm worried about him, the dog.
Has he been to the dress rehearsals?
He has, and good reviews.
Really?
Good reviews.
Fantastic.
But I'm worried.
Do you feel a little uneasy knowing you're the only person in the household that will not be appearing in this show?
Yes, I feel left out. Our other dog and I are left out. That means we have to be the big supporters, right?
That's true. Very, very true.
I will never act in any kind of... Have you ever done any theater, Steve? Any kind of community theater, anything like that? Because that's not for me.
No, not since I was a kid. No.
I feel like a lot of people in our business, they like Grizz on the Kiss FM morning show. He has that kind of background, and he's done that before. I could never do that.
I would do one night of like just in front of a crowd talking about my whole career of what I've done. Because I've got some pretty good stories to tell, some fun things, almost like a one-man show where I could kind of describe what the last 30 years have been like. I think that'd be pretty entertaining just because of the early years with Buzz and some of the crazy stuff we did, not to mention the years with Haskins and those shows and everything else. But no, never. I haven't done theater since probably, I don't know, fourth or fifth grade. We did The Wizard of Oz. I was in that. And that was the last performance I've done, and I'm very happy making this our only performance, the radio show. It's enough. It's good. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. I feel like that in itself is plenty.
No one has to look at me. The only spotlight I've got are these fluorescent lights over me, so feel much better.
There you go. That's right. It's all you got to do. Hey, good start to the show. Enjoying it. We'd love to spend the day with you. We've got Scotty Walden coming by at 5 o'clock. Excited about that. Scotty will be here at 5, and he's bringing one of the Miners. So that is also, I think, a fun part of our show today because he has with him an individual that has been very active, let's just say, on social media, and looking forward to that, too. So... got that confirmed. Trey Dunson will be with Scotty Walden on the program here at 5 o'clock today.
It's going to be a great experience to preview the spring game, Steve, with head coach Scotty Walden here on the show. I have a lot of questions as far as how the spring game will go. I mean, most of these questions that I have, he won't be able to answer. And I think maybe some will be answered on Saturday for the big spring game. But I'm just excited for it. We've talked all these practices, and we've talked about how, you know, for these practices, the program has chosen to restrict, these practices to only alumni. And of course, people people, you know, like donors who are involved with the program to actually watch the full duration of practice. So this is our first glimpse, along with all the other fans out there. It's coming this Saturday, and that is the UTEP football spring game.
Dunson is one of the new members of the Miners. He was at Gardner-Webb. He's a linebacker. He had offers from schools like La Tech, Arkansas State, Jackson State, and Arizona State, and chose the Miners. So excited about that and looking forward to hearing what Trey has to say about practice so far.
You think about that linebacker room right now. You've got returners like Nate Diamond, and you got somebody like Trey Dunson, who it needs to be a contributor this year, because look at the production they lost.
That's
James
true.
Neal, and then future NFL linebacker Tyrese Knight. You're losing those two guys who led the way for them at the linebacker position, and they've got to replace it. And not to mention, UTEP plays a 3-5-3 setup, and so with that kind of setup, or even if it's a 3-3-5 stack, they rely heavily on their linebackers. So Dunson will be, by default, you know, a contributor this year in the fall.
Yes, he will. So we'll get a chance to talk to the two of them coming up at 5. Then at 6, we're going to talk to former city rep Peter Schwartzbein. There was a fun day yesterday. I got to be a part of something pretty special. It was, you know, an event that was held at the U.S.-Mexico border out there, you know, by really close to Sunland Park and Executive in that area. Dolly Dolly is what it was known as. And this was really cool, Adrian. We're at the mile one marker right there, you know, where you have basically the U.S. and Mexico. And what it was a bunch of guys on the U.S. side and then a bunch of kids and adults on the side of Mexico. And we played a game of catch. It was simply throwing a baseball, I would say anywhere from 10 to 25, 30 feet. Yet one end was Mexico, one end was the U.S. And being a part of this first ever event with the two nations was a lot of fun. The weather was perfect, although the gnats that were flying were just brutal. I've never been a part of something where I was sprayed head to toe with bug spray, right? The gnats don't care. They fought through it. They fought through everything. In fact, I was doing an interview at the end of the day, and as I was talking, gnats were going right into your mouth. Like they were they were biting. They were pissed. The gnats were not happy yesterday. We were happy, not the bugs. But other than that, it was a terrific day. Great opportunity to be a part of something like that, and I hope it becomes an annual thing, because it was a very cool event, having a chance to have a simple game of catch with kids from Juarez, with the significance of where we were, where the ball went, and simply, you know, a stone's throw from the U.S. to Mexico and back.
Yeah, it really shows, number one, our proximity to the border and our, you know, our binational culture that we have here in El Paso, that we embrace our sister city over there. And I would say that that's one of those events. I mean, I saw it all over social media, Steve. It looked fantastic. It looked like the kids and everybody who were participating had a great time. So I'm happy that you were a part of that, and I'm happy to recap it here on the show, because more events like this should definitely happen. We've talked about the international run that happens, you know, on the bridge and between both cities, El Paso and Juarez.
Yep.
So I love the fact that now we're extending it not only to running, but to baseball here.
Me too. So we'll have Peter on the phones with us. He's going to join us live at 6 on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline, where all of our guests always appear, and that will get things rolling in our 6 o'clock hour. We're with you till 7 o'clock tonight. We got a lot to talk about over the next 2 hours and 45 minutes. And by the way, we're going to be live tomorrow and Wednesday from the college football bowl meetings that are happening here in town. That's going to be at the convention center. Adrian, excited about that too, because we will be a part of an event where every bowl in America, everyone, is here in El Paso, represented over those few days this week, and we're going to have guests from pretty much all the big bowls that you can imagine on the show with us.
Yeah, I can't even begin to tell people how big this event is. I was talking to somebody about this, and they were like, wait, this is coming to El Paso? And I was like, yes, the annual meetings for the bowl season is coming to El Paso. What an exceptional job that the whole committee here for the Sun Bowl has done on this, from, you know, their communications team to their promotions team to everybody up top. top. Yep. It just seems like I look at the itinerary, Steve, and it's a day filled with a who's who, like different speakers, different people,
That's part of it.
And it's all the best bowl games you're going to find in college football. They're all coming to El Paso and seeing our city. How cool is that?
Yeah, we're talking about everyone. And so we're looking at getting not just representatives from the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl on board and the New Mexico Bowl for obvious reasons. Jeff Symbieta is a friend, and they've hosted UTEP a bunch over the years. But Rose Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl, we could talk to them as well. And looking forward to doing all of that during the course of those 2 days when we're live out there. And that should be a lot of fun. So as you might imagine, we got a lot to cover, a lot to talk about today. We'll do Scotty Walden coming up in less than an hour for you UTEP football fans getting ready for the spring game this Saturday and the garage sale to follow. But first, let's kick it off right. Here he is, Charlie One with traffic. All right, Adrian, thank you very much as we continue here on Sports Talk. Hey, meanwhile, this is also pretty big news. Don't know if you saw this earlier today, but how about the fact that John Sterling is retiring, effective immediately. He's 85 years old and now has announced that, in fact, he will be stepping down. And, effective, right, he's done. Like, it's, he's decided, I guess, he had enough. And I'm always impressed when individuals just decide to call it quits with no warning. And John Sterling, for whatever reason, decided he's had enough. And that's the end of that.
Could have retired before the season started. Could have retired after the season, right?
I don't know why he retired now. I have no idea why that is. But, yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. And as we all know, John Sterling is somebody that has pretty, he has his calls are usually pretty lively, to say the least. So you know that when he's got a home run call, it's something special. This is not from this year, but in case you don't know, the longtime voice of the Yankees who's been calling games since 1989, it's what John Sterling sounds like when he's calling a home run.
3-1, swung on, hit in the air to right center and deep. Bradley going back. He's on the track, at the wall, and she is gone. That's a long way to the back end of the Boston bullpen over to into the crowd. Gio Urshela, the most happy fella. Oh, he's the most happy fella. Gio Urshela homers, and the Yankees finally have a lead. It's 1-0 Yanks.
There you go. So that's what it sounds like when you've got, again, John Sterling calling the action. And I guess just decided after, 5,420 regular season games and 211 postseason games, he's just... this is the time. So there we go. 64 years of broadcasting, 36 years with the Yankees. And as he said, leaving very, very happy. And the Yankees will be honoring him on Saturday. So John Sterling getting honored on Saturday. And by the way, I have no idea why he didn't decide to retire during the last season, or at least maybe he just sometimes, it just feels right and you just decide, okay, I'm good. Maybe that was it for Sterling. Maybe he was approaching 2024 and then thought to himself, I want to do things different. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, maybe so. And for him, maybe he started off the season uneasy on either side and just realized, early on, like, hey, I'm ready. I'm ready now, and this is time to call it quits.
Yeah, there you go. So he did work the Yankees season opening road trips in Houston and Arizona, called the Yankees' first home series of the season, and his final game was when the Yankees defeated the Blue Jays 8-3 on April the 7th. So... that's going to be it. And their pregame ceremony will be on Saturday for the radio voice of the Yankees, John Sterling, calling it a career. And pretty impressive at that. All right. And just to put it in perspective, like, Sterling's been around a while. He's 85, about to be 86 years old, and he's been doing this for a while. It's like the equivalent as if, John Teicher was calling UTEP games for another 20 years. That's almost like what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, just an incredible run right here. And yeah. I mean, when you put that into perspective, you think about it, the lore of a team like the Yankees and a franchise like that, and to be there until you're 85 years old shows your dedication and all the loyalty that you've had with that organization.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know how old Vin Scully was when he retired officially, but probably same age range, I would think, mid to late 80s for Vin when he called it a career with the Dodgers. I'd have to see how old he was. Any idea how old Scully was when he stepped down?
I just did a quick search. Let me see if I can find an exact date. I didn't get any luck there. Let me find the exact retirement date.
Okay. But I feel like he was somewhere in his mid to late 80s. I mean, listen, when you're that blessed.
88.
88?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
That's impressive.
It is. Sterling's 85. Although I'll just tell you this. I mean, you know, again, like Vin Scully, doesn't sound 85. If you listen to him call a game, still he's got great pipes, sounds much younger, has always been pretty sharp, fun, and just always really gets into it when he calls it, has his nicknames for the players, and then when the Yankees win, he always gives you that little exaggeration at the very end.
Yeah, and I like that, right? Because that it shows that you have a deep rooted feeling about this organization and club, and this means more to him than just anybody else. So because of how long he's been there and because of what he means to the organization, that's how he can go off and venture into things like that.
No doubt about it. All right, 39 passed. As we continue, we'll come back, take a break, and don't forget, coming up in 20 minutes, UTEP head football coach Scotty Walden. He'll preview the spring game with us, and we'll talk about everything happening on Saturday. All that and more. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. This one put a smile on my face because it's hilarious, but any Yankee fan knows that's just typical John Sterling. Here we go with Juan Soto up.
And the pitch hit in the air down the left field line toward the wall. It's gone! It went over the high wall. Juan Soto's first home run as a Yankee. A fly ball down the left field line. There is a Soto photo. A home run in the left field seats. He's wonderful. Marvelous. And the Yankees have now taken a 4-3 lead.
I love that. I think that's hilarious. And again, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of Sterling. I mean, if you're a Yankee fan, there is no bigger homer in the history of the organization than him. You're going to miss him. Nobody's going to have nicknames like that. Nobody's going to start singing when guys hit home runs. That's just going to be different. It's a different animal.
You're right. I mean, you also talk about somebody who can do this on the spot and has this kind of craft. Like, that's just really impressive right there.
But I'm sure he probably has it down and has it rehearsed, and he knows what he's doing. You know that. He knows what's going on. But, man, it's fun to listen to. It really is. And, some of us will miss that. I'm sure Yankee fans will miss the Yankees win. You'll miss that more than anything because nobody can do that. It's like you can't be that guy, you know? It's like John Teicher. When the day comes when he steps down, whoever assumes that role, will never, never be John. You can't. You gotta just be yourself and, you know, create your own style. You can't be a legend. It's just the way it is. You can't do that. It's hard enough to replace somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, legends like that in broadcasting, you almost don't even want to think of what life would be like without just hearing them call those games. Like, how are the Yankee fans going to react for the rest of the season knowing that this could be a historic season, could be a real special season, and don't have their radio voice backing them?
Yeah, what if? That's a great question. Since we played the what if game earlier this week on the show, we'll probably keep doing that soon enough on the website. You know, what if the Yankees win the World Series? And they do it in a year where their radio voice steps down on April 15th. Then what?
Do you think he'd ask to come back just to like a guest in a couple innings to just, call a little bit here and there, like part-time, more like a guest? That doesn't happen.
What do the Yankees do? Because imagine if they do that and they lose like a playoff game or a World Series game. Like, you don't want to ruin the mojo. You got to keep it going.
Yeah, actually, now that you're talking about it, if you are somebody like me and takes these things, you know, like sports, little things that might go against you, whether you might take them into a conspiracy or not, I probably wouldn't ruin the mojo there.
I wouldn't want to mess with that, Adrian. I just wouldn't want to mess with that. Because you never know. All it takes is somebody that, like you said, just decides, well, you know, I'm gonna roll the dice, and if it doesn't happen, then you gotta deal with, well, what happened there, right? You don't want that. You don't even want to mess with that. But it's a very good subject, and it's a fun thing to think about. But anyway, truly one of the great broadcasters. NBA season has come to an end. That is also going to be fun because the play-in tournament starts tomorrow in the NBA. Haven't talked about this yet. Based on the way things ended, Sixers, Heat, Bulls, Hawks in the East, and Pelicans, Lakers, Kings, Warriors in the West. Lots been said about the Knicks. The Knicks did not lay down when a loss would have meant Indiana as a 3-6 matchup in the first round of the playoffs. They went and beat the Bulls in overtime to give them the 2 seed, which means the New York Knicks will be playing either the Philadelphia 76ers or the Miami Heat. I give them a lot of credit because they easily could have tanked, finished with 49 wins, and trying to take the easy way out with Indiana in the 3-6 matchup. But the fact that they went ahead, won, clinched the 2 seed, won 50 games, and now will either battle Miami, who's given them trouble for years, or Philly. Believe it or not, the Knicks haven't played Philly since 97. The last time the Knicks played Philly, they swept them, brought brooms out, and started actually sweeping the floor when they beat the Sixers.
Wow, so that's like right before AI, right? Right before Allen Iverson joins the Sixers, and they're able to beat them there in that late 90s period.
Yep.
Am I right there on the timeline? Kind of.
I think so.
I think so.
I don't know if Iverson was with the Sixers in 96, 97. That's a really good question. I'm not sure about that one.
Well, regardless, Steve, the same conundrum that the Knicks were facing was the same conundrum a lot of these teams are facing. Like, how do I need to strategize winning or losing based on the play-in scenarios or not play-in scenarios? Pelicans, Lakers, you can make the same argument for LA. Do they want to play Denver in that first round? Or do they want to maybe lose this play-in game and then play OKC as the 8th seed? That's an interesting thought. But to go back to the Knicks, I'll ask you, 76ers with a hobbled Embiid or the Heat, which really haven't been the Heat this year, who would you rather face in the first round?
Oh, that's a good question. That is a really good question. I would probably pick, God, I'd probably pick Miami.
Yeah.
Over Phil. I don't think I want to play a healthy Joel Embiid.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Even though Miami is kind of like the Michael Myers of the NBA. Like, every time you think it's over, they come back out of the dead. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have that in them this year. I feel like for the Sixers, playing Embiid in a 7-game series, I just wouldn't want that. I think if there's ever a time to play Embiid or the Sixers, it's this year because they're a little hobbled. They haven't been the same. They have a lot of question marks on their roster. I'm not a big believer in them making a legit run or even being a legit contender in the East. And then on the side of all this, Steve, the Knicks have been legitimately playing great lately. Like,
yep.
Brunson has turned into one of the top, if not the top point guard in all the NBA. You can make an argument. He's a top 5 player in his position, no doubt about it.
I was wrong on the timeline. It wasn't 97. It was 89.
Wow. So you're
That's
back.
The last time the Knicks beat the Sixers. 1989. When they swept them 3-0.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, how did the Sixers, without AI, get a chance to get to the playoffs, just period? So that makes a little bit more sense. So that's like the twilight years of Dr. J. Am I wrong?
No. He was long gone by then.
Long gone, okay.
In those
days,
it was Barkley, Cheeks, Jaminski, Percy Hawkins. That's who that's who Philadelphia had.
Yeah, a little Mo Cheeks reference. I like it.
Oh, yeah. And the Knicks had Mark Jackson, Gerald Wilkins, Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, And my all-time favorite Knick as a kid, Johnny Newman, who was on that team, too. What so that's team. When that's when the Knicks got it done and swept Philadelphia. 1989. Crazy enough.
Man, you think about that decade for Knicks basketball. This decade, maybe, you know what? Maybe it has some good stuff to come with the Knicks, and maybe they could channel some of that. The late 80s, early 90s success that they had making deep playoff runs. Maybe this is the team that could finally come back and, you know, remind us of those days for the Knicks.
You never know. You never know if that's if ultimately that could be the, you know, this when it's all said and done. I'm just fascinated by that, that it's been that long. So maybe it would be fun to play the Sixers. Can you believe that two teams like that haven't played each other in, what, 35 years in the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know how they've dodged each other all this time, knowing the Sixers have had success, knowing even the Knicks, despite having some bad years, they still had Melo, still had success in spurts. So it's surprising that these two teams haven't played in the playoffs like this.
Yeah, it really is. Anyway, all right, one in the books. We've got a lot more to come, including a little UTEP football. That'll be joining us next. Head coach Scotty Walden is going to be dropping by here in about 5 minutes, and we'll have a chance to talk to him and a member of that defense. We'll do that in a moment. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso.
From the 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studio, here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, start of hour number two here on Sports Talk. Welcome back, everybody. I got Adrian across the glass. You know it's a big. You know it's big when Jeff Darby's arriving in the studio. That's that right there tells me we've got a major UTEP event happening here sooner rather than later, Adrian. You know that, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. You know what that means, right?
Jeff Darby's been doing this almost as long as I have, which is scary. But, yeah, he's here. The spring game is just now, what, 5 days away, and we have an opportunity to talk a little UTEP football here to begin hour number two of the show. Great to see Scotty Walden back. First time I've seen you since the day you were hired. It's been a while, man.
Yeah, see, we got to get together more often, brother. I've been missing you, man. We just had a quick WWE talk before this. I mean, we got to get back together.
Had I known you were having a WrestleMania party, we would have joined you for that one because we had a big WrestleMania gathering that weekend. It was a lot of fun.
Well, we're gonna combine them next year, brother. Now that we know we have like interests, we're gonna do that.
You just got to make sure that the next time UTEP has a house show at the Haskins Center, it's not football, so you can actually go take the kids, sit ringside, or go into the stands and just have a good time with that.
Brother, we will kill it. We actually did one of those in Clarksville. House show came, and the people thought that they paid us to be there. That's how loud we were. We got the chants going.
Oh, yeah.
Me and my coaching staff. So if that comes to El Paso, you let me know, brother. We're going.
You might be running in the ring and interfering in a match if they have one in El Paso. That could be a possibility.
Steve, listen, that would be an absolute dream come true. I would, and I don't even have to do anything to anybody. Like, I would let somebody Stone Cold Stun me, Sweet Chin Music, and I would sell the mess out of it, man. So, like, I'm up for anything.
Who was your first? Who was the first wrestler you gravitated to as a kid?
Shawn Michaels.
100%. Right out of the gate.
Charisma. Yeah, charisma. I actually cried. 1995, Survivor Series. He's fighting Psycho Sid for the belt. Mm-hmm. Got cheated. Psycho Sid beats him, or Sid Vicious. And I literally bawled my eyes out. I was 6 years old. My mom was like, look, bro. She was like, look, we're not ordering these pay-per-views if you're going to cry every time. So I was like, all right, yes, ma'am. You know, I had to suck it up and get ready.
Yeah, but a couple of years later, the Montreal Screwjob was nice revenge. So you got a chance to enjoy that, too.
Man, the Montreal Screwjob. And as a kid watching that, I watched that live. You know, like, we never missed it. When I say we never missed a pay-per-view, never missed an event, like, we didn't. Like, she would get them. My mom would get them every month. I remember seeing that live, and honestly, I had no clue what was going on. But now it's cool to see the documentaries on it. It's crazy. Yeah, but he gets payback.
My listeners are going to kill me. They're like, you're kidding. You've got Scotty Walden in studio, and you're talking wrestling?
We can do this all day.
We'll do this off air.
You got it, bro.
But in the meantime, you've got one of your newcomers on the defensive side, one of the linebackers that I think a lot of minor fans are going to get to know pretty well this year, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm really excited about Trey Dunson, who's in the studio with me. So we were joking in the car over. Trey is originally from Atlanta, Georgia, played at Gardner-Webb, and we were joking on the car ride over. I was telling Jeff Darby, the reason why Trey Dunson's here is because when we played them at Gardner-Webb, he absolutely went wild and caused a lot of havoc for our offense. So I'm just glad he's on our side now in that UTEP blue and orange.
So you knew right then. You said, okay, when it comes time, Trey's got to become a member of my team. Wherever I am now, UTEP, he's got to be a minor.
There's no doubt. It was pretty interesting when we got this job. You know, he was in the portal, and we remembered him. We were like, you kidding me? This guy's in the portal. Him and Jaden Smith, you know, Jaden Smith was an all-conference wide receiver at Eastern Kentucky who had just diced us up 2 years in a row. We saw he was in the portal. We saw Dunson was in the portal. Let's go get the duo. Let's go get it. It was awesome.
Very nice. Trey, good to have you on the show. Thanks for being here. Move that microphone a little closer to you, and you tell me, first off, how's El Paso treating you, and how's spring ball treating you here?
El Paso is different, but I'm getting to liking it. It's getting real used to. And spring ball, the playbook is very different, but I'm getting a hold up to it now.
Excellent. Yes, let me ask you, I know what the offense is like. Defense, you guys are going to be flying around and hitting people as much as that offense is going to be making plays?
Most definitely. That's the standard. Yes, sir.
I think the exciting thing also for you is you join a defense that has probably more depth at the defensive line coming in than you might have expected. So a lot of guys here are returners and are playmakers.
Yes, sir. There are a lot of playmakers, like Nate Diamond in the linebacker room. He's a linebacker that's been here, and he's a playmaker, yes. And Nate should have an exciting season.
Well, I'll say this. Miner fans want to see somebody to replace Tyrese Knight. You know that.
Most definitely.
He left a huge mark on this program and a big impression after what he was able to do.
Most definitely. That's why I came also. When I seen Coach Walden and I seen the standard that Tyrese Knight had set, I had to come.
Coach, I got to tell you, the pro day was terrific. The turnout was unbelievable. We had scouts everywhere from the NFL. Obviously, Tyrese was the main attraction, and he really lived up to it. But I thought that so many guys that had the opportunity to also work out for the pro scouts had just an incredible chance to take advantage of that, and they did. They made the most of it.
It's fantastic. You know, we had about around 20 scouts or so, and then I was able to get with those guys, you know, after the event and kind of talk with them, and you know, they were just so appreciative. We actually had one of the offensive linemen, Andrew Mayer, he actually trained with our strength coach when he came in, and him and his family were like super appreciative of, you know, just us opening our doors, and that's what we want to do for our alumni. That's what we want to do for our guys. These guys are training to go to the pros, and it was an awesome opportunity for them, and they definitely did a great job.
I heard Andrew had a sick workout. He did things that offensive linemen just don't do, starting with that 33-inch vertical.
The vertical is what grabbed everybody's attention, which, you know, ended up being one of the tops, you know, out there. I mean, it had to be at least top five, you know, even when you look at the combine. So we're really excited. I think that there's going to be – whether you know, I know Tyrese, I feel really great about him getting, you know, obviously drafted, but, you know, these other guys too, I think there's some fringe guys that we could see get drafted, and even if they don't, they're definitely getting in some camps and getting that unsigned free agent thing going, which, you know, we're really excited about.
Coach, why is it important to have liaisons, like, at the top? We talk a lot about your support staff members who work with you. Why is it important to have, like, a liaison to help players transition to the pro level or just life in general?
100%, Adrian. That's a great question. I'm as a head coach, a lot, you know, obviously everything falls on my shoulders. We all understand that, but I'm only one person, and there's so many things that, you know, need to get done in our program, right? And so I think as a leader, you have to be able to hire great people that you can delegate things to that need to get delegated, and so that everybody in the program isn't sitting there waiting on one guy like, okay, you know, I've talked to Coach Walden about pro day. I've talked to Coach Walden about this. I'm kind of waiting on him to make a decision, or I'm waiting on this, you know, and now I can say, hey, so-and-so, you're the liaison for this, and we can keep the machine rolling, as we say. And I'm blessed to have the best support staff in America, starting with, you know, my DFOs in the building today, Robbie Matus. He keeps everything going. But having those liaisons, Adrian, is paramount, because we got to keep the program moving daily. We can't be stagnant.
You have the largest support staff I've ever seen in covering this program in 30 years. And I'm going to ask you, is this staff very much the same size you had when you were at Austin Peay? Because you brought just about everybody over with you. So was this what you were used to having when you built the program over there?
Very similar, yes. The difference is they're getting paid a lot more now, which is great for them. You know, we made what we had at FCS, at Austin Peay, work in terms of, you know, hey, you have to split this salary. And, you know, but what it shows me, though, these people that were in those positions, they were willing. I mean, you had guys like a great example is my assistant quarterbacks coach, Miguel Lavina, Los Angeles, California, played quarterback at Whittier College, gets in a car, drives all the way to Clarksville, Tennessee, all the way across the country for free to be a volunteer, lives out of his car. And then eventually I'm able to hire him as a GA, pay him a little bit. And so, like, and he did such a fantastic job. He's one of many supports that people I can give you an example of. So whenever I got this opportunity at UTEP, it's like, man, like, this is, these guys have worked for pennies and they've done an amazing job. You know, they haven't ever let that define them, because they know the investments you have to make in this business to climb. And that's why it was a very easy transition for them. But I'm a big believer in having a big support staff, because the way college football is orchestrated now, it's, you know, what we do is probably 10% football. There's so much more to it. And you have to have people in place to help these young men navigate life and navigate football.
It's a business. And by the way, with Cade coming into the show and talking a lot to us, he told us just how important academics is. And he told us that you have to sit in the first two rows. No hoodies, no phones. You better be able to just get right in there, go and study and make an impression, because otherwise you're not going to find yourself it's not going to be a pleasant situation for you when it comes to football. Let's put it that way.
No, we had some guys challenge us on that week one, and that was you know, pretty quickly. I think they found out we were for real on that. I actually had a story from one of the professors that you know, she up there teaching class, and all of a sudden they hear like these, you know, the floor creaking, you know, and like, what's going on? And it was one of our players dragging a desk because there was no seats in the front two rows, and he drug a desk all the way to the front row, and he's like, what are you doing? And he's like, look, my coach is not going to find out about this. I am sitting in the front two rows. But these are habits that we're building in these young men's lives, right? Like, I know that I'm, again, judged on wins and losses and all that jazz, and that's great. I understand that's a part of it, but we got to help these guys win in life, and I'm serious about that. I know a lot of coaches talk about that, but that's something I'm serious about. So when these guys get out in the real world, they say, you know what, man, I remember when Coach Walden had a standard, you know, of these habits, and it's made me the man I am today. And that's what we want to emphasize, because we're training these guys for life and not just football. And that's reality.
You probably also want to have the highest academic GPA in the conference when it comes to football.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we want to win at everything we do. You know, we want to win in recruiting. We want to have a great GPA. You know, we've got a 2.75 team GPA goal, which, again, we're building blocks. You know, the team GPA when we got it was around 2.5. We want to raise it to 2.75. We eventually want to have 3.0s. And I think, again, champions are champions well before they're champions. And what I mean by that is the habits that you develop as a champion are those things are orchestrated well before you ever put that ring on your finger. It's not just snap your finger, oh, this just happened. Mm-hmm. These habits are developed over time, and then they matriculate on the field. And it's like, whoa, how'd this happen? Well, in the dark, when no one's watching, when we're not on the radio, not on TV, we're putting in work behind the scenes, and we're being detail-oriented with it so we can reap the benefits of it whenever you know, our name is called. And so that's the way we believe in, you know, how you do something is how you do everything. And so the details of our program is critical.
Ahead of the spring game, Coach, which, by the way, to our listeners, there's tickets available, $5. You all have had two scrimmages come your way. What did you think of this past weekend scrimmage? This was scrimmage number two. We talked a lot about scrimmage number one, but tell us what you learned from your team this weekend.
Yeah, for sure, Adrian. That's a great question. And to your point, Adrian's absolutely right. $5 tickets. We've already got over 900 tickets out for the spring game. So we want to hit that 2K, 3,000 mark if we can, man. It'd be awesome to have a great crowd for the Sun Bowl.
I want to get to 10,000 tickets for the spring game.
Come on, man. High standards. Let's go.
I don't want to just start with 2,000. I want to hit 10K when it's all said and done.
Cap, that's why I'm in here with you, man. You're raising the standard. I love it. Let's get 10K. There's no reason why we can't, man. Let's do it. Let's do it. You know, Adrian, go back to your question about the scrimmage, man. Is this scrimmage, when you go around the room collectively, you know, after every scrimmage, we meet on every single player in the program, and we discuss, all right, how this young man did, how this young man did, and the synopsis was every position group we felt did better from scrimmage one to scrimmage two. This thing is all about progression. You know, we know we're nowhere where we need to be yet, but it's about, are we getting better or are we getting worse, which means staying the same, right? So we did a great job. I felt like we were so much cleaner. We were much more efficient. This scrimmage too, some guys made some big time plays offensively. You know, we did, you know, had way less turnovers. Defensively, I thought we tackled better. We didn't have near as many missed tackles. You know, we had safety run support coming up, making plays that looked like in the scrimmage one they were going to go for 20, where in scrimmage two they were a 1 yard gain. You know, and so I loved seeing the back and forth battle. You know, that was really a really good indicator that I think we have a good football team.
We'll come back. We'll talk more with you. We'll talk more about not just the scrimmage, the garage sale that's going to be happening as well. I saw the sneak peek, and there was a ridiculous amount of items that are going to be there. There should be 10,000 people just wanting to get merch when it's all said and done.
Amen.
And buy that. So we'll talk more. Coach Walden here with us. We'll also talk a little bit more defense as well. Stay with us. Charlie One back with traffic. He is I understand this, Coach, that when it comes to your calendar, that man is basically like an extension of you. Is that the best way to describe Robbie?
Man, we might be underdoing it there, man. He knows my schedule better than I do. I text him now, hey, I want to do this. Can I do this? Like, mm-hmm. He's got my schedule. He knows it front and back, our team schedule. Without Robbie, man, I'd be lost, man. He does a lot in our shop.
It's How big. Long has he been with you?
So, Robbie, this is going to be his third year, with me. We hired him in 2022 at Austin Peay. Mm-hmm. And, ever since I've been with Robbie, we've won championships. So, Robbie's a secret sauce, man.
Yeah, you got to keep that going and bring him with you for the ride.
Bingo. That's exactly right.
Adrian asked you about spring ball. I'll kind of continue that conversation. Would you say right now, offense or defense is farther ahead from the beginning where we were a few weeks ago to where we are right now heading into the game this Saturday?
Yeah, kind of hard to tell. I always think the defense, the offense has caught up a little bit, but I always think the defense is a little further ahead, especially for this reason. Not because our players aren't working their tails off doing great and investing and buying in. It's the fact that we are so different than kind of probably what's been done in the past, mm-hmm. offensively. It's just a whole different type of approach to the game, a belief of the game. I think the way we view the game and our philosophy is vastly different. And I think guys are starting to understand, like, we're serious about it. Like, and we're going to be aggressive. We're going to snap the ball every 12 seconds. We're going to throw shots. We are not going to be conservative. We're going to go for it on fourth down. I think, like, scrimmage one, we had a couple fourth downs and I'm calling a play and guys are like, wait, we don't want to punt. And I'm like, no, hell no, we don't want to punt. We want to go for it, And, so I think that understanding of the philosophy, not so much, and I'm not talking from a talent perspective. I'm talking from a philosophy perspective and understanding that. And I think that's kind of been the deal.
What's tougher from a conditioning standpoint? Okay. Trey and the defense, knowing that if the offense does their job, they're probably going to be on the field 35 to 40 minutes a game. Or offense, knowing that if you got to get up to the line of scrimmage every 12 seconds to snap it, you have to be in unbelievable shape to just go and be there for every single play as you move the ball up and down the field.
Yeah, the offense is starting to figure out the level of conditioning that it takes to play in this system. I mean, you have to have – we've had old linemen drop 20, 30 pounds, right. Because these guys are – running every single practice, they're working their tails off, and the guys are understanding the conditioning level offensively. So it is a big demand, because tempo to me is not a offensive philosophy, it's a program philosophy. I mean, Trey will tell you, like, we do tempo defensive drills because we on Saturday expect to, when we play an offense, to sit there and yawn at them getting lined up, and we already got our call, let's go. Like, we defense is difficult because you a lot of times have to react to what an offense is doing, but we view defense different. We are an attack style defense. We want to dictate to the offense. So that's why we train our entire program from a tempo standpoint. And to your point about the defense being on the field a lot more, we actually work on specific drills. Like, we did a first down competition the other day. So we talk about staying on schedule with our offense, and we talk about complementary. You'll hear me say this a lot, complementary football. Trey's heard me say it a lot in our team, because it's not just about the offense. Our offense has to understand, while we are a tempo-based system, we got to get that first down to keep our defense fresh.
Yep.
Because if you're going, snap the ball every 12 seconds and going three and out four straight times, well, you're killing the defense. Obviously, from a game management perspective, we would not do that. We would slow it down until we got that first down. Mm-hmm. And then we let that's really when our tempo sets in, is when that first down occurs. Now we're rolling and humming, But we are really methodical until we get that first one, because we want to call good plays, get set in the right stuff, so that our defense, is not defending, 90 to 100 snaps a game.
Yeah.
Trey, I got a two-parter for you. First off, can you give us a little explanation of the position you play? Because it's very, it's kind of a hybrid role. Last year, you were playing in that nickel role for Gardner Webb. Mm-hmm. Three seasons ago, you're playing safety. This time around, it's mm-hmm. a little bit of a hybrid linebacker role. My second question is, Heard County High School out in Georgia, that's a huge program right there, and a lot of great talent come out of it. Just how good of a program is that program?
That's crazy that you know Heard County all the way in El Paso, but Heard County is a growing high school, like, literally. We're a small school, but when I was in high school, I won the state championship my senior year, and my junior year we contended. We lost it in, like, third or fourth round. We put in eight. My senior year, I think I had eight people go D1. So we put out a lot of talent, and academics are big there. And on your first question about what position I play now I play inside linebacker. So it's a little more physicality in the box. So I play behind the defensive lineman. So I've moved from out of space to in the box now.
Do you like that? Do you like the physical aspect of the game and having an opportunity to hit people a little bit more?
Yes, sir. Put me closer to the ball. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, Trey, what about the depth at linebacker? Tell us a little bit about that, because we did have some players from last season graduating. So who are some of the guys along the side you that you think have a chance to really make a big impact this season?
You got Jake Hall. You got Kenny Baker. We have you got Dylan Brown Turner, Trace Meadows. We have Josh from last year. Josh has made a big impact this year. He's came out this, I think this year he had, in the spring, he has three picks right now, leading the linebacker room. Josh is coming along. D-Hop. I can't forget about my dog, D-Hop from Tulsa. He's making a big impact also.
Coach, you feel pretty happy right now with the linebacker room, as Trey's talking about?
I do. They're playing really physical, downhill. You know, Trey's been living in our backfield a little too much, it's good. You know, they are flying around. I love Jake Hall has just been a very consistent young man who has just brought physicality every single day. Nate Diamond has made a vast impact. I mean, he's had a heck of a spring. D-Hop, Trey's point, has really last week really stood out to me, was making a ton of plays. And I think that room, they're very smart. Coach Clark, you know, is one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. I mean, he is spot on. He is a phenomenal position coach. He gives those guys a holistic view. And in our system, our linebackers got to be dang near the quarterbacks of the defense. You know, them and our safeties, I would say. But the linebackers especially, because if you can't stop the run, there is no game. You know, that's one mantra that we have, and we have to be physical in that box and let these guys play free.
Since you're talking about Trey in the backfield, it kind of makes me talk about the offensive line, just because UTEP's O-line last year was so seasoned with so many vets who all spent the last 4 years as starters. So there's one thing we know about the offensive line this year. There might be some returners, but it's going to be a different look, especially in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I will say this about the offensive line. The offensive line to me has been the most, trying to look for the right word here. Going into spring, I wasn't sure what we were going to have. They have been the most impressive group to me all spring, in the sense of this. I wasn't sure with the lack of experience, with, you know, kind of some things we saw, and we came into spring and these guys have flourished. I'm super impressed with our offensive line. And I'll say this, between our ones and our twos right now, there has not been, like, you can't even tell a difference. I mean, they are really coming off the rock. Coach Stanchek, we hired him from Tulsa. He does a massive – he's an All-American at West Virginia, played for a phenomenal offensive line coach out there, and played for the Falcons a little bit. He brings a mentality to those guys where those guys are rolling off the rock, playing very physical. And those guys, at the end of the day, that's what we said. We want to come out of spring with those guys not thinking and playing fast, rolling off the rock, establishing a new line of scrimmage. We have really, really been impressed with our offensive line this spring.
That's awesome.
Coach, two position groups I want to touch on. Really liked what I heard about Brighton Thompson and that defensive front. And then in the secondary, I love how Oscar Moore looks. I haven't gotten a chance to see him practice, but I love his speed, love his physicality, and I liked him a lot from last year. These are two guys right there that you all brought back from last year's roster who could make a big impact this year.
Nah, Adrian, you're spot on, man. You're a great evaluator, because Oscar Moore has been one of my favorite players of the entire spring. He plays safety with the mentality that we want at safety, which is a downhill, physical, tackling safety that is going to get it on the ground. And, man, he has put discipline with his game. Coach Sigler, you know, Kelvin Sigler, our Cody C. came from Jacksonville State. You know, he played at Alabama, coach with Nick Saban. I mean, he has a phenomenal pedigree coaching those guys up. Oscar Moore, you're spot on. He has done such a great job getting better every single week, but he is a physical safety, man. We love seeing him come downhill. And then talking about Brighton, and Cap, you mentioned this early in the broadcast, our defensive line is our deepest position, which if you were open me up and you were like, all right, what position do you need to be the deepest on a football team? I want our D-line, because I do not want one D-lineman, unless he's dominant, can do it, play 70 snaps. Coach Chris Jones keeps those guys rotating, and we are fresh and physical and playing fast. But Brighton, he has been elite with his ball get-off. And even if he doesn't make the play, he causes what we call on defense havoc. And when you cause havoc in the backfield, that makes that running back bubble. It makes that quarterback step up into another rusher. It causes havoc in that backfield. That's what Brighton does. And I remember Brighton coming out of Atascocita High School. It's funny. And I looked on the roster when I took the job, and I was like, man, get the coach that kid fired up. And he has had one heck of a spring.
That's great. We're talking, again, UTEP football right here on Sports Talk. Scotty Walden with us right now. And we talk more with you about the offense because we've talked so much defense. Got to bring up the offense.
Sure.
We talked about the O-line a moment ago. You got some good battles right now.
Yes.
Quarterback is a good battle at this point in time.
Yeah.
You got some newcomers. You've got a couple of returnees. It's good quarterback room. This is the first time you've evaluated them, though, in game situations since you've been here. I always wonder about spring ball because it's one thing learning the playbook. It's one thing having individual workouts. It's something else learning the offense and showing it for you over these last few weeks.
Yeah.
How has that quarterback room been? And I've heard great things about J.P. Pickles. I hear that he's got terrific talent, came early.
Yeah.
But you tell me what QB's been like.
I love our quarterback room. Every single day these guys have gotten better grasping the offense. And we put these guys in. You know, Cap, just so you know, we put these guys in a lot of situations, meaning like scrimmage is one thing, but we do a ton of situations where we believe in, Trey will talk to you about this too, you know, we believe in being situational masters, third downs, red zone, you know, all these aspects. So it's been fun to watch those guys progress through there. I think they're starting to be comfortable with the offense to where they can now focus on situations as opposed to like scrimmage one, it'd be third and seven and we're throwing a check down really fast where we need to, if we have protection, we need to hang on and go through that progression and see if we can't move the sticks here. But now you could tell scrimmage two, they were much more in tune to the situations. Like we threw the overtime situation at them in scrimmage two. We've thrown 2 minute, 1 minute, 4 minute. You throw it all at them, and these guys have done a really good job adapting to that. I love the strengths of our room. The coolest thing about it, Cap, is everybody in that room supports each other. You know, we had a play. I showed the team this play. Skylar Locklear threw a bad snap, twirled around, has a rusher in his face, play's broken, throws it off his back foot, 50 yards on a rope to one of our receivers down the field for a 50-60 yard touchdown. I mean, it was a heck of a throw. The first guy to be in his face to cheer him on was Cade McConnell. That's the type of competition I want, and vice versa. The coolest thing is when Skylar would do that, like on scrimmage two right here, Skylar dropped a dime for a touchdown on a big-time vertical ball. The very next drive, Cade McConnell does the same thing. And those guys are both the first ones to congratulate each other. That's the team chemistry and camaraderie. It's a healthy competition. I love seeing those guys compete. And J.P. Pickles, man, he's got all the talent in the world. I think he earned a lot of respect. We did a tackling drill. Trey remembers this. We call it iron drill. It's the first day of full pads. And J.P. Pickles, we made the quarterbacks live. You know, one thing, Cat, we've made the quarterbacks live in iron drill. We've made them live in scrimmage one. And, just to test their mettle a little bit, see what they're really made of. And J.P. Pickles, man, he ran over one of our DBs in that first deal. And I think he really earned the respect of his teammates from that day going forward.
Nice.
Quarterback position coach, are you somebody who likes to stick with one quarterback for the whole season? I know that this competition could drag out through the summer and maybe even fall camp. But do you like to stick with one guy for the season? Or do you have a philosophy that, you know, maybe you'll switch it up here in the season?
No, that's the one position, Adrian, that I don't believe that in. I think, you know, when you choose your guy, you put all your investment, you put everything behind that guy, and it's that one guy playing. That's a position where it's different than receiver or linebacker even, or any position where you can actually rotate people, because that quarterback is the general of your team. He's the face of your program. He's the guy that has to be the consistent figure. Now, obviously, if he's not performing to the standard or something of that nature and we have to make a change, or I've been in a scenario with this. My first year at Austin Peay, we had a very close battle. We actually played both guys in game one. That was just how that battle played out.
Yeah.
I'm not close-minded to that at all, if that's where this thing goes. But we won't announce a starting quarterback, or for that matter, really a starting position after spring ball, because, you know, to me, it's you have a summer evaluation. Fall camp is really long. There is a lot of battles to be made, and so we won't announce – you know, anybody that's a starter coming out of spring ball. You won't see that announcement, but I'm open early on to maybe if we're in a very tight battle with that position, playing two guys. But once we make the final decision, you know, we roll with that guy and we get behind him.
I think it's important, though, because if players have a really good spring, but now they realize they can build on it in the summer and build on it in the fall, that there's three battles. It's not just one phase and that's the end of it.
Bingo.
They realize they've got to work now for the next 4 months to really earn themselves that opportunity when the season rolls around.
Yeah, and again, there's no right. That's what I love about football. There's no right answers, right? It's just my philosophy. I don't really believe in, you know, naming these guys a starter or something after spring, because there's so much more to an evaluation. And I think guys get complacent. And then when the guys behind them are like, well, okay, this is pretty much their guy right here. You know, I want to see competition, you know, in that room. Now, I do think coming out of spring, we have an idea of what we have. We have a better idea. Okay, this is where we're strong. This is where we're weak. This may be where we need to go address some needs. Mm-hmm. And this is where we need to focus on. Like Coach Jake Brown, right, does a great job with this, some little things like this that people don't see behind the scenes, kind of pulling back the curtain. He does a drop chart for the receivers, and he charts every drop they had in spring, and what he tries to find is a correlation. So if there's an in-breaking route that a guy's making to his left or an out-breaking route to his right, and 80% of his drops were in that, he'll spend that summer running routes with that kid in that specific type of route-breaking point to get them better at that. So there's so much. I've seen guys go in from spring to summer and get better. Yeah. And especially now, people got to remember, we get about 15 OTAs, or give or take, with these guys in the summer, where we're actually on the field with them and we get an hour of work with them. So, like, there's so much more time to get better nowadays, and so much more time we get with these guys in order to make a better evaluation.
After spring, when you start meeting with players and really letting them know where you see them, you know, now and in the future, could we see guys go into the portal and perhaps a little movement as you start shaping your roster for the 2024 season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. I mean, this is the day and age of college football we're in. It wouldn't surprise me, you know what I mean? And that's not saying that, you know, I hope that happens. You know, I don't. You know, I love our team. I love our roster. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, I know some guys are going to, you know, get feedback and, you know, feel like, you know, they may not have, you know, gotten to where they wanted to be or not gotten the reps they wanted to. I mean, you know, I just think it's the day and age of college football we live in. We're in the portal window. And,
yep,
you know, that's part of it, unfortunately, you know. But my thing is, we're always going to be men of integrity with players. We're going to tell them where they stand, tell them what we think their strengths are, what we think they can get better at. And hopefully they view that as a constructive environment, as opposed to, you know, well, this guy doesn't like me. No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying this is where we view your game, where we would like to see you get better, and how you can help this football team. Because at the end of the day, it's about helping the organization.
Coach, I really like two of your Cali guys in Judah Izinwa. He plays a tight end spot. I also really like Amari White. He's somebody who's tried to get on the field over the last couple seasons, hasn't really been on the field consistently. Could those two guys be difference makers this fall?
Absolutely. They have had a phenomenal spring. Judah is, you know, when we got here, you know, looking at his body, looking at you know, his ability to run, at first we kind of viewed him as, okay, this guy could be a good receiving tight end. Mm-hmm. As spring balls progress, you know, we forget Coach Delaney, our tight ends coach, reminded me of this. You know, the guy benches 400 pounds. This guy's strong. And what you're seeing is that being applied on the field now. He is being very physical in our blocking game, in our running game. And, you know, he's doing a heck of a job in that, but he's also so versatile. You know, he had an explosive play in our scrimmage catching the ball, but he was super physical blocking. And then, man, you just hit on another cat that, you know, I really, really like, and that's Amari White. Amari has really come on. I mean, he is a strong – he's got great speed. But, man, my man's got some pipes on him, man. He's strong, man. That joker will go up and snag that ball, and we need that around all of our speed. But he's got good speed as well. I love the progression of Amari. He's getting better every single day, and I think he's got a chance to make some big-time plays with the Miners.
How about former quarterback Kevin Hurley, who's now moved to receiver?
Yeah.
How have we seen him progress?
I love Kevin. You know, I love former quarterbacks that play other positions now, specifically receiver, because that's mainly what I've dealt with in my career. Trey Goodman, who's here with us, was a high school quarterback in Atlanta, Georgia, and was an absolute stud. And he's a stud receiver because he knows what that quarterback's looking for. I think Kevin's starting to figure that out. Like, okay, I was in the QB room. I know the progression. I know what a quarterback should be looking at here. I know that I'm the third progression in this route. Doesn't mean I'm not getting the ball, but what it means is I can take time and manipulate my defender more so I'm not open too early, so the quarterback bypasses me, right? So there's little things of the game that he has such an advantage on. But Kevin is a unique skill set. He is a big, physical kid. He can block you. He can run. He can catch. He's starting to really understand the position and just little things like alignment, stances. You know, first I joked with him after his first week of practice. I said, "Well, now welcome to real practice, bud. You know, this is you actually got to run around now instead of sit back and throw a ball all practice." He was laughing, and he's done a fantastic job. But I really appreciate Kevin's openness to try something new and to go out and be able to do that. He's done a great job.
All right. Let's talk about spring on Saturday. The spring game starts at 10 a.m., $5 to get in. I think there's a lot of people listening that are very curious to see what this team is going to be all about. They'll spend $5 in a heartbeat to be a part of that, then get in for the garage sale, which we'll talk about in a minute. How will you structure the spring game? What's the format going to be?
Yeah.
Will it start immediately as a game itself? Will it build into it? Give us a little bit of an idea of how it's going to work out on Saturday.
Yeah, sure. I'm really excited about this. So we actually, you know, we're bringing back a bunch of celebrity coaches, which you saw Will Hernandez announce, mm-hmm. and we're going to announce a few more here shortly.
Cool.
We've got about 25 to 26 former alums that will be celebrity coaches. One big thing for me is I want our alumni to understand we want to open the door for them to be back a part of this program. I feel like in order for our players to understand where we want to go, we got to respect, honor, and know who ran before us. And then we have to build on that, right? Because, like, we had Trevor Vidito come speak at practice the other day. It was super impactful, super powerful. When the all-time leading passer in school history comes to your practice, speaks to the team, and speaks about what it means to be a minor, it builds pride in your program. So we want to get the alums back. They're actually going to coach in the game. I've told them, like I told Will, I said, hey, man, look, if you guys want to call fourth and one. So for everybody out there, the bad calls or the going forward on fourth and 16, that ain't me, brother. That's the alums making that. Because I'm giving them freedom, man. They got the reins to throw it deep. They want to run it. They get to make those calls. So it's really cool, the freedom that they're going to have on Saturday. But also, on top of that, we will structure it. We're going to draft teams this Thursday. We have two general managers. So the general manager of one team is Dr. President Wilson. Mm-hmm. Dr. Wilson, our president. And then Jim Center, our athletic director, is going to GM the other team. So they're going to draft the teams on Thursday, and they're going to sit up in their nice booth on Saturday and get to watch their product on the field. So it's pretty cool. But it'll go right into a game, mm-hmm. Cap. So we'll do a normal pregame routine, and then we will go into a game the first half. We'll play like a normal game, you know. It'll be a running clock in the second half, and we'll play like a real game. At halftime, the cool thing is, the caveat is this, at halftime we have some fun events planned where there'll be competitions. I don't want to give too much away, but there'll be competitions, and it will actually affect the score of the game. So you may have one team going a half up by 10, that may be down by 20 coming out of half, you know. So everything matters in this game. You can't leave your seat.
Trey, you got to bring it, man, because it sounds like you could be up or playing from behind the second half.
That's right. That's right, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. I love it. And then the garage sale after the game is going to be fantastic. I saw some of the previews on social.
Oh.
There is like, you guys are getting rid of everything. It is probably the greatest UTEP gear sale of all time.
It is. You know, I was told this. This is amazing. If we sold every jersey, right, this is every football jersey, if they're sold on Saturday, it'll be $80,000 plus worth of merchandise, just the jerseys. We are putting out, if you're a UTEP minor fan through and through, and you've been a part of this program, you got to come get this Nike gear, man, because we can't do nothing with it. All right, and I hope they just save a few for the coaches, because I kind of want to hang some up on my wall in my office at the house. All right, like I want to get some memorabilia, but man, there's our iconic items, and we're gonna have that sale going on right after the game. So it's gonna be the best day, you know, ever in the Sun Bowl, man. It's gonna be really fun, really exciting. Usher in a new era, bring our alumni back. We'll have some big time recruits on campus, and then on top of that, we'll have a great garage sale to top it off.
I love it, Scotty. Trey, great to see you both. Thanks for being here, and I can't wait to see you guys here on Saturday.
Hey, always a pleasure being on. Thank you for having us. Picks up. Appreciate it.
You got it. We'll come back, wrap up hour number two in a moment. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Home builder and what they've done for so many people. In fact, 2000, Adrian, they built over 2,000 homes in El Paso. They keep building in communities all over town, and there's a reason why Paolo Verde continues to win award after award here in El Paso.
If you're talking about the Far East side, you're talking about that new, you know, all the new builds that you see on the Far West side, or maybe even some in the Northeast, that way out there. There's a chance that maybe Paolo Verde Homes helped design one of those beautiful homes out there. And yeah, there's a reason why they've been around this community for year over year. And I love their billboard, by the way, Steve. You see Paolo Verde Homes and you see the word love in between. You can't spell Paolo Verde without love.
You're right. And they also have incredible floor plans, open floor plans. If you've never had the opportunity to visit a Paolo Verde home, I've got news for you. You can go online, paoloverdehome.com. You can see these floor plans. You can see what they look inside out, communities they build, and then make your appointment to visit the experts at paoloverdehome.com. And that's beautiful. And they are going to be a big part of us on Sports Talk here. And we are super excited about having them along for the ride. And just can't wait for Edgar and company to be joining us the way so many of our partners have over the years. And we'll talk more about them here in the days and weeks to come. Meanwhile, 2 hours in the books. I'm ready for the spring game. Excited about that. Just like I am also ready to go back to the phones. Let's go to Andy. He's joining us and wants to talk a little bit about UTEP football. Andy, what's happening? How are you?
Steve, that makes two of us. I'm extremely excited for that game, and you can't help but get excited when you listen to Coach. I mean, he's like a ball of energy that doesn't stop. You know, right. Energizer Bunny has nothing on this guy.
100% correct. 100%, and I'm. You know what? I hope we get 10,000 there on Saturday, not just for the garage sale. I've got a feeling there's 10,000 fans very curious about what they're going to see with this UTEP football team, especially on the offensive side.
It is unlike anything we've ever seen before. This up-tempo, quick-tempo offense and every, 18 seconds or something?
12.
Like that,
12.
12 seconds? It's yep. Like, oh, my gosh. So it's like we're going to see something special, I think.
Can't wait. Can't wait. You going to be there on Saturday?
I will be there on Saturday, and I will be ready for that garage sale as well.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing you at the Sun Bowl. It's going to be terrific. Thanks for calling in, and definitely we'll make a big plan on Saturday, and bring your credit card, because it sounds like we're going to be definitely stocking up on UTEP goodies.
Oh, there will be plenty. I've already heard.
I believe it. All right, Andy, we'll talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Come back with our final hour. If you missed it over the weekend, a very big event involving both the El Paso and Juarez, Mexico communities. Peter Schwartzbein is going to join us next to recap what happened yesterday as Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.
Adrian Broaddus.
Start of hour number three here on Sports Talk. Welcome back, everybody. Adrian, right across the glass. We take you up till 7 o'clock tonight. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, we had a great lineup for you, including this guest who joins us live right now on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline, where all of our guests always appear. Yesterday, a big day, a historic day, really, at Historic Monument Mile Marker 1. That's right. It was a celebration involving unity in the borderland. Dale Dale, and it took place yesterday afternoon, involving both members from the U.S. as well as Mexico. And being one of them, I could tell you it really was an event that'll be talked about for quite some time. Here to bring his thoughts as a man that helped organize this event, Peter Schwartzbein with us right now on the program. First, Peter, good to have you on the show, and congratulations on what no doubt was a very memorable event for a lot of people involved.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, it was great to see you there. It was great to see everybody that came out. You know, yesterday was a historic event, one of the first times I think baseball has been played across the border. We know that baseball is something that's very popular for a lot of communities in northern Mexico and, quite frankly, through a lot of Latin America as well. But today was utilizing sports and utilizing baseball to talk about the ways that our border communities are connected.
You were the co-organizer of this event. You're also a national chairman of Sister Cities International. and many years in the political structure and here in El Paso. You tell me, was this something that had been talked about for some time? When did this event really first first start to get organized and really the brainchild behind it?
Yeah, I would say we really started working on this project for the better part of a year. Dalius Hoffman, one of our core organizers, who is currently the curatorial director for Oklahoma State, has done a lot of work within baseball and performance art and podcasts and a lot of great things. And we connected, talked about something we could do here on the border, and then started talking with the Museum of Art and other partners about doing something special here. You know, for me, a lot of my work, both as an artist and also, as you said, a former elected official, is really about communicating what it means to be from the border. And that is that we're defined not by the barriers between our cities, but by the ways that we're connected, whether that's through food, music, family, culture, business, in the case of yesterday's sports. And so working with that, we found a really great partner in Dr. Garcia Chavez at the Universidad de Autónoma de Ciudad Juárez, who came in, and then, working with us three, we were able to find the partnerships, and especially the biggest, I think one of the biggest supporters and partnerships we had was working with Sister Cities International, being able to support of the organization as chairman, and then the city of Ciudad Juárez. Ciudad Juárez obviously has been our sister city for as long as El Paso has existed as an American city. Our two cities are completely intertwined. But we've had a lot of support as a formal sister city program over the last few years. And particularly, there was a three people at the city of Juárez that really helped make that happen. The first was Juan Acereto, who is the binational director for the mayor of Juárez and the city of Juárez. He has been Tara's champion about ways to bring our communities together, especially the youth. And so he was very, very supportive of that. The second in the city of Juárez was Tania Maldonado, who is a regidor. She's a city council representative, and part of her portfolio is bi-national affairs in their sister city program. And then Juana Escalante, who is director of the sports department in Juárez. And so they saw the vision that Dade, Dr. Chavez, and I sort of brought to the table, and they're like, we want in. We want to figure out how to make this happen. And that really, really helped. You know, a big part of this, too, is we also had some support from some of our local elected officials' office, both the congresswomen and our state senator, Cesar Blanco, were very supportive of these kind of binational projects about sort of pushing back on some of the sort of false narratives of the border and celebrating that unique part here. And so, I'm also very fortunate to have those 8 years of relationships as well. And so, a big part of this was just figuring, getting in touch with people at different federal agencies and others to get to yes, and I would say that folks within Border Patrol, as well as the International Boundary Water Commission, IBWC, which actually owns the land of International Boundary Monument, mile marker number one, were very supportive. You know, that place that we were at, Steve, is on the National Register District. Actually, in 1976, it was designated as a peace park between our two communities. And obviously with the shift in narrative about the border and people being concerned about the border as a threat, access to that has increasingly over the last few years become limited. But yesterday, I think, was really a way to show how places like that can be used for great cultural celebration and cultural pride. And I think that what was really great about what happened yesterday was it wasn't about me. It wasn't about Daedalus. It wasn't about the officials in Juárez or editor office. It was about folks like you and the 60 kids that we had in Juárez. We were able to donate a number of gloves with our sponsors and supporters and gave it to a lot of the kids in Juárez. The city of Juárez donated buses to be able to transport those kids here, many of which came from some of the more challenged areas, the colonias in Ciudad Juárez. And I want to ask you, because what we had was a social practice. All of us were essentially a large sculpture. What did it feel like to you to be part of that and to throw a ball to somebody who may not completely speak the same language as you, may come from a different country. What did it feel like to throw that ball back and forth?
Terrific. Absolutely terrific. Well, first off, I'll say this, because I threw with quite a few different people yesterday until my arm started hurting, which was always a good sign. But you know what? It's the language of baseball. That's what connects us. And it connects both of our countries. It connects so many different people together. And it was nice. Everybody felt like we were all united together for the same cause. And I think people on both sides of the border just enjoyed the event to get together, share baseball, share the opportunity to have this chance to unite with us. And to me, that was what this event was really all about.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. You know, through a simple game of catch, we can show the values and show our shared humanity, you know, and through mutual respect and understanding, we can build those bonds of understanding. I would say that, you know, sometimes we have a challenge here in El Paso and in Juarez where folks from the outside tend to sort of project their own sort of views and perspectives, nightmares and fantasies on the border. But I think what we understand as fronterizos, what we understand as folks on the border, is that the border is not a threat to either of our countries. The border is an opportunity. It's an opportunity economically. It's an opportunity culturally. And I think what El Paso and Juarez can show the rest of the world and showed the rest of the world yesterday is that we know how to live together. And we know how to try to make the most of a situation being out here. You know, you lived here. Try driving to Austin. Try driving to Albuquerque or Tucson. It's hours away from the next big cities, both in Mexico and the U.S. But we know that we have to lean on each other, and I think we do a really great way. And yesterday was a way to show how our two cities work together so well and choose to work together and be united and not divided.
Peter Schwartzbein with us as we continue here on Sports Talk. Joining us now is also event co-organizer Daedalus Hoffman, who you heard a moment ago, Peter, reference on this event. Dade, good to have you on the program as well with Peter. You tell me, you just had a chance to hear how he described this event. What was it like for you as a result of all the months of organizing and planning, seeing it all come together yesterday?
Well, I'm so happy to be here with you. Thanks so much for taking an interest in this story, in this project. Of course, I would second the emotion of my compadre and my collaborator, and echo everything that he said. I mean, for me, as an outsider in this community, as somebody who came to Peter with an idea, with a dream of hosting, producing a game of international catch that could stand as a contrast to the temporary political situation that characterizes the El Paso Juarez complex right now, that characterizes the borderland more generally, was such a rewarding and an educational process for me. You know, catch is a form of touch. It's a way to reach out and connect with another body across a great distance. It's a way to transcend borders. It creates its own language, the language of play, the language of sport, the language of art, the language of feeling, of one human feeling with another human. And we endeavored towards that yesterday. And I hope that the ripple that we created there becomes a wave of change that helps to show that another way existed before, and another way is possible again.
Could we see this turn into an annual event, guys? Something that maybe could become something that just continues to grow from here?
Well, I'll tell you
from your mouth to God's ears. I mean, Peter will elaborate on that. Sorry. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. You know, one thing I think is important to understand, right? And it's something that a lot of work, Daedalus' work and my work looks at as well, is that if you can't imagine a better future, you can't have one. And the powerful yet simple act of catch, to Daedalus' point, is a way to show that something different can exist here. And not something that's new, but something that's very old. And that is the way that we are connected. We had folks that came in from other parts of Texas who were very interested in wanting to do this. I can tell you that Daedalus and I were already talking about what is a way, utilizing our sister cities, to go and take this to other communities across the border, to not just have it only in El Paso, but other games of catch that are here across, whether that's Presidio in Ojinaga or Mexicali in Calexico or Brownsville in Matamoros. But thinking about the sports diplomacy and thinking about the game of baseball and the language of sport and how that can connect communities, I think is something that is a very powerful thing that we can look at for other communities as well. Of course, it takes partners, it takes other dreamers and other doers to make that dream turn in reality. But after today and looking at what we were able to capture and what we were able to create, I think that vision is even stronger. Yeah, I don't know if you had
alive
else
and well.
You wanted to add.
Yeah, it's alive and well, and I completely agree. I mean, you know, right now we're still sort of in the afterglow of of this rock that we just pushed up a hill, right? You know, and so on one hand, I'm thrilled and exhilarated at the possibility of continuing this work, and on the other hand, I think, man, we need a nap, you know. But we embraced a pastime to gesture towards a new future. And I think we can continue that work. I mean, I'm currently based in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I'm the curator, the head curator for Oklahoma State University. And just today I was reached out to, Peter and I were talking at lunch, and I was reached out to by some folks in Tulsa who are interested in doing something like this between the sovereign nations that are in Oklahoma, the 39 39 indigenous tribes that were, you know, brought to Oklahoma through forced migration through the Trail of Tears there. So I think there's many valences, there's many ways that communities can find a story embedded in this very simple act.
Now, one thing's for certain, a lot of people, everybody that was there, I could tell you this. It was a celebration. They got together. Peter, I know for you, baseball's been something you've been involved even since the beginning of the Chihuahuas. When you put the book together after the first couple of seasons, you had that terrific coffee table book that you produced. So I know baseball's been a passion of yours for a long time. We play on the same Sandlot team. And maybe now you got to figure out a way to recruit Dade to the team and get him to fly in from Tulsa to play some ball.
I love
that.
And I'm
in the Sandlot space. I've been in it for a long time. I'm one of the original founding members of the Texas Playboys Baseball Club, and I work with Jack Sanders, who's sort of like the godfather of Sandlot baseball, to produce publications and events and documentaries, and I help to build the Long Time and produce the Long Time, which is a social sculpture that lives on the far east side of Austin, Texas. And I participate in the Sandlot community in Chapel Hill and Durham, North Carolina, as well as in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So, I'm a fellow traveler in the Sandlot space and always looking for other visionaries to leverage this movement as a way to strengthen our democracy and to increase awareness about how we can gather and how we can use gathering to address persistent social problems.
I'd say, Steve, Dade has been there from the very beginning when it came towards the Texas Playboys and a lot of this sort of vision of Sandlot. Bit of a freelancer too when it comes towards picking up on different teams. I don't know if we can afford his free agency fees to get him on the Diablitos. maybe we can get Senator Blanco on our team as well. It looks like he was probably a pretty strong shortstop when he played at in high school over there on the east side. So
yep.
So that's what's great about Sandlot, and there's, I know that you're a fanatical Mets fan and have been, and I don't want to get political here. My mom grew up in Philly, even though she lived in Texas, she raised us right as being proper Sixers, Eagles, and Philly. I don't want to get political on the show, though, Cappy. I respect you as a Mets fan. I celebrate and honor your pride with the Mets. I think
at least it's not the Yankees.
Yes, thank God. But I think that it's. I think that this whole Sandlot thing is something that is such a unique part of a really beautiful community-based kind of practicing groups. I think that even generationally, you know, you look at the Kiwanee clubs and the Rotary clubs and how people of different generations got together and were able to be in a social club and be in a social space. And I think that I've seen with Sandlot teams such a sort of unique way of sort of self-curation with really unique people, folks like yourself, Daedalus, other artists and architects and folks and entrepreneurs that kind of get together and then utilize these spaces of Sandlot baseball, not only just to celebrate the game and to bring camaraderie and people together, but also to help with fundraising and with food drives and other ways of helping people. I mean, even today, yesterday's game was a great way to get people together, get sponsors and others, and be able to deliver, you know, close to 50 gloves to some of those kids in Juarez. I mean, each one of them had a brand new glove and loved it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Gentlemen, terrific work. Congratulations. We appreciate you both taking a few minutes and talking to us on the show today. And I'll look forward to getting a chance and joining you again back out there real soon and doing this all over again.
Okay, great. Thanks for having us. Be well and keep on keeping your eye on the ball.
I'll do my best. It's never so easy, but yes, I will do it. And I'll call Scotty Boris, and I'll see if we can try to afford bringing you over for us next year. How's that?
Sounds great.
I'm there.
All right, guys. Again, Daedalus Hoffman joining us along with Peter Schwartzbein as we continue here on Sports Talk. Charlie's back. He's got a traffic update. Stay with us, 22 past, as we continue 600 ESPN El Paso.